All right, get more Star Trek from the holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. There are two specific tiers that holodeck listeners would love and cherish. And that's our $3 tier and our $5 tier, each of which offers you more Star Trek from the holodeck discussions, behind the scenes, bonus shows, pre-shows, additional podcast discussions. We get into all of it. So if you want to help us stay on the air, please head to patreon.com/RainmanDigital and pledge. It's the only way we can stay on the air, especially in this day and age where everyone has a podcast. A lot of them are shitty, let's be honest. A lot of celebrity podcasts, a lot of them are shitty, let's be honest.
Surprisingly, yeah.
But they're clogging up those algorithms, and it's harder to be seen. So please, subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital.
Warning, Star Trek from the holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Welcome, everyone, to Star Trek from the holodeck, the Discovery Edition. I am Michael, your captain and host of this podcast. And of course, in the studio with me, as usual, and I wouldn't have it any other way, is my ensign, who will not be a first officer ever.
Ever? Are you sure about that?
David Sabal. Hello, David.
Are you sure about that, Mike? Because I'm going to work up that ladder. Like Tilly, I will start from the bottom and just trudge along like the little engine that could.
Listen, Dave, you don't have what Tilly's working with.
No, so, I do not.
I run a sexist starship.
Sexist starship.
Listen, I'm not evolved. I'm part of the Terran Empire.
Oh, dude. In that case, it's Captain Killy. And Captain Killy is super hot.
All right, Dave. So we have a lot to talk about in this discussion. We're going to be breaking down episode 7 of season 3, Unification 3. So much has transpired over the last 7 episodes, and everything just came to a head. In this episode, we have number 1 Tilly.
Yay!
Spock's legacy, Vulcan being renamed to Navarre. Burnham's mother is back, and she's part of the Romulan warrior nuns that was originally introduced in Picard. This season.
Yep.
Or earlier this year, which was one of the strengths of that series.
It was.
To be perfectly honest, it was one of the cooler concepts. It didn't really lead to much in that show, but
let's not think about that, Mike.
But it was a cool concept.
Yeah.
And they did more with it in this episode in a meaningful way that added to character development than all of Picard.
Let's not think about it, Mike, or else my head and your head's going to explode.
Listen, I'm just saying. When you put a good concept in the hands of capable writers, you get great things, as in the case with this episode here. Episode 3, Unification 3. Episode 7, Unification 3. So let's just start and stay with this entire Burnham aspect. Let's not pussyfoot around. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's just get right into it, because there's too much to talk about this week. This was a great episode for Burnham specifically. So the writer of this episode, Kirsten Beyer, really brought Burnham's internal issues to the forefront of this episode. We've been discussing Burnham's changes all season. We had quite a debate during our last discussion that filled up my inbox with comments and opinions from our listeners. Some agreed, some disagreed. The thought that she's much lighter, more content with who she is, right? Those are things that we've seen, ideas we've seen pushed forward into the episodes. The idea that she's learned a lot during that year alone with Book. And the conclusion that this is... I want to say that, and the conclusion to that is much what we had thought, Dave, what we had discussed. It's not that she's not dedicated to the Federation and its ideals, but she's conflicted. I believe we had said that in episode 3 of this season.
Yeah.
Burnham experienced a different way of life during her time away from everyone, and she found that she liked it. She liked this different life. And when you think about it, it actually makes sense. Episodes like this really show whether or not the writers understand the psychology of their characters. That's something we don't really talk about a lot, Dave. The psychology, which, let's be perfectly clear here. To be a good writer, you've got to understand a little bit of psychology.
Yeah.
I've always said that in order to be a good writer, that's able to write real and interesting people, you have to understand psychology a bit. And Burnham, during that year, experienced something she's never really had before. Freedom.
Yep.
Freedom from expectation. Freedom to do with herself as she wishes. Growing up, she was raised under Vulcan discipline. She wanted to prove she can live up to Sarek's expectations. Then, with the relationship she formed with OG Philippa, it had a lot to do also with her expectations as well as Sarek's expectations, because he had introduced her to Philippa.
Yes.
Then her relationship with OG Philippa came with its own set of expectations. Being a child that lost her family at a very young age, it's quite normal to form these types of relationships. Expectations are a powerful tool that can influence an individual's beliefs and thoughts. There is enough evidence, particularly in Western contexts, that demonstrates the impact of parental expectations on children's career choices.
Mm-hmm.
So everything we've seen up to this very moment may not even be something necessarily that Burnham had wanted for herself.
Exactly. Because everything is about, everything up to her and throughout her childhood was about Burnham trying to fit in.
Yeah. Yep.
And like,
exactly.
Then after, as a child trying to fit in, and then when she gets older and then she becomes part of a crew in Discovery, you see that she's having issues of fitting in with even her crew and getting along with her father during season one. And then it comes to a head when the whole expectations like are compounded by the appearance of Spock, who is basically treated like he's God's gift to the Federation. Because remember, in season two, everyone treated like Spock like he was the man. He's the guy that basically is going to save the day. It's not Burnham. And Burnham's the one that's been trying to figure out her brother and try to figure out the legacy of Spock throughout season two and try to actually compound that with the suddenly, like what you said, you have expectations of Sarek, her father, expectations of Jerjo, who's her mentor, and then the expectations of everyone being the sister of Spock.
Yeah, well, Book said it himself in this episode, talk about coming from a family of overachievers.
Overachievers.
But it's more than just overachievers. And, I mean, let's stick with what he said, overachievers. I mean, if we study overachievers, many of them suffer from issues of insecurity. Many times they suffer from the weight of expectations. They're overachieving, not all the time, but many times because of things that they believe are expected of them. Look at Burnham. We know that she puts the weight of the world on her shoulders. That's why she breaks the rules. That's why she doesn't listen to orders sometimes, because she takes it upon herself. She feels like, shit, I need to fix this. I need to do this.
Yes.
So this episode was just beautiful in the way of characterization for Burnham. Mm-hmm. And now continuing this thought of Burnham, suddenly Burnham is now slung nearly 1,000 years into the future, alone. There's no sight of the Federation, and all the weight from adolescent baggage and the parent-child expectations, they've been lifted. Finally, she can live a life that she possibly might feel as her own for the first time. And there may even be some guilt to that. The fact that, hey, you know what? I actually feel relieved. I don't have to worry about people. Discovery is safe. I know they're safe. They may show up in 100 years, though, because that's how time travel works. Now, suddenly, a year later, after she has grown comfortable with the idea that this is her life now, a life of her own choosing, essentially, that has now been taken from her. And Kirsten Beyer proved, Dave, in one episode, that the path the writing room has been paving for Burnham this season is logical and sound.
Yes.
And I feel like you and I were wrong just a bit. Now, we were rightfully hesitant and we were rightfully questioning things because of the issues of the past, right? But in the end, this is excellent characterization. They were leading our character down a specific path. She needed to confront her issues specifically in this episode.
Yes.
Bringing Burnham's mother, Gabrielle, back into the series at this point was a great call. Having her be a member of the Kwat Malat? Is that how you say that?
Kwat Malat.
Kwat Malat?
Yes.
Kwat?
Kwat.
Matwat. It was another good call on Beyer's part, because it utilized canon that functionally worked as a built-in writing device that was used to quickly bring several thoughts to the surface. Number one, getting to the root of Burnham's issues.
Yes.
The idea that she's not being honest with herself or others. How can she speak on the behalf of the Federation truthfully when she feels like she's being dishonest with herself and others? That's how you do it, Dave.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I thought that that scene between her, Burnham, and the three judges was so cool, because there's more going on psychologically in terms of Burnham herself than just simply facing these judges and trying to prove that her choice is the right choice.
Well, this is how you get characters to talk. When you have characters just monologue for no reason and they start saying things and you realize, okay, so you're only talking right now because the writers don't know how to express this idea. How do we express this idea? Well, let's just have you guys talk for no fucking reason. Whereas this episode was completely designed to get a character who isn't necessarily open and get her to talk by using her mother and that entire quorum scene. You get a character to express herself honestly.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of ideas out in the open that the audience, that we as an audience, we need to hear these things. We need to understand why she makes certain decisions. And now we understand those decisions. This is how you write a fucking episode of television.
Yeah, because if you do it, if they were to actually do it very exposition-y, just like we said, with a monologue, I think there'd be a lot of... There's a lot of characterization that would have been lost.
And also, do we know she's being honest because of how she's a bit withdrawn and how she doesn't want to necessarily look vulnerable at times? Mm-hmm. Do we know that she's going to be completely honest? According to these last 7 episodes, she hasn't been entirely honest. So the only time we can fully feel as an audience that we're inside her head is this episode.
Yep.
The idea of the absolute candor and using it in this way is
genius.
It is really good.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, it's like that whole scene where she's facing off with the judges and they're just the one judge just tears her apart. It's slightly cringy for me. And I mean cringeworthy as in a good way.
Yeah, I agree.
Because like
it's uncomfortable.
You feel uncomfortable. Yeah. You're like, I literally felt like that judge was actually poking me in the face.
Yeah.
And I thought that was genius. That's because it was a great way
to bring your audience in and make us share the feelings
of Burnham.
Yes.
Because after that, I felt really sorry for Burnham, because I'm like going, as a character, well, as number one, as an audience, we now relate to that character and basically say, okay, now we understand your motivations and we understand what you've been going through now since the beginning of this season, and it makes sense. And suddenly now Burnham, the one thing I've been really impressed with, dude, up to this episode is the fact that they've been really building up Burnham very nicely compared to what they did in season one and two, where a lot of people care, and like, especially in season one, when people would always characterize Burnham as like a Mary Sue.
Yeah.
And everything else. I don't consider her like that in season three.
I don't think she's ever been that, but that is an argument people have been making.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, when you compound that with I thought what was genius was actually using the title, too, of Unification 3, and suddenly you add the added expectation of actually tying this episode to, like, Unification 1 and 2, which are Spock-heavy episodes from TNG, and then suddenly it ties into Burnham. At the end of this, it took me about the second go around, and then I realized that this is just like what you said. It's about expectations of Burnham and
100%
how this whole time we've been saying that Burnham needs to make a choice for herself, not because of what she's told by JoJo. And like in season one, not because of what Sarek tells her, season two, not because of what Spock tells her. And then we get to season three and we basically finally see her say, no, I'm making this decision based on me. This is my choice.
Yeah. Now, Dave, going back to your Mary Sue comment, I want to tackle this for a second because you bring up a very relevant and interesting topic, because to this day we hear that being used for Burnham
a lot.
I don't think people know what a Mary Sue is in terms of the true literary definition. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave. A Mary Sue is basically a perfect character, right? That can do everything.
That can do everything. She's
perfect.
She's perfect.
Okay. Have you not watched the last three seasons of Discovery Trolls?
Exactly.
Come on, Trolls. I mean, Burnham is probably one of the most flawed characters we've ever seen in Star Trek.
Exactly.
She constantly makes mistakes, constantly speaks when she's not supposed to speak. She breaks the rules. She's not a Mary Sue.
She's not a Mary Sue. She's a
just because she's confident and competent doesn't make her a Mary Sue. That makes her a smart character, but she's extremely flawed.
Oh, yeah. And I like the fact that in this season, we're seeing those flaws brought forth front and center.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of ways, season three is doing a lot of cleanup work to help kind of...
Well, you got to see her mature, right?
Yeah. Refortify the character of Burnham.
That's the beautiful thing about a flawed character, is they're complicated and you could see them grow. Obviously, if Burnham was just as flawed as she was in season one currently, then yeah, that would be bad writing. Like, well, come on, we're talking about character arcs here. She needs to progress. She needs to grow. And she has. So, I just get frustrated seeing some of those comments, you know?
But it's there.
Yeah, I know.
I think it'll be there till the end of time at this point.
It's how Star Trek is. Star Trek is always divisive unless it's TNG or the original. It seems like there's just certain Star Trek fans that can't get on board with certain things.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And when it comes to the writer of this episode, Kirsten Beyer, I call her different things. Do we know how we pronounce her last name? Is it Beyer or Beyer? It's Beyer, right?
I believe it's Beyer.
Yeah. Kirsten Beyer has grown as a writer over the last three seasons. Now, she has, Dave. If you remember, if you go back to the tapes here, she's been one of our favorite writers. Ever since season one, she has always written the most Trek-like episodes. But now with this episode, she has shown her ability to craft meaningful characterization while progressing narrative, progressing the main myth arc, adding to the bigger Trek universe by expanding on canon and recontextualizing established canon. That's not easy.
No.
And yet she did all of it perfectly. And we're going to get into all of these intricacies in just a second. But first, get more Star Trek from the holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. In order for us to stay on the air through 2021 and beyond, we do need the support of our listeners. We're competing with huge corporate podcasts. Everyone is doing a podcast these days. Very big budget, highly produced podcasts. And we indie folk are left kind of scrambling. So in order for us to stay on the air and continue to put together high quality content, we do need the support of our listeners. So head over to patreon.com/rainmandigital and pledge $3 or more a month. For $3, you get the behind the scenes tier, which is loaded with bonus shows and pre-shows that we do before every single discussion. And also the $5 tier, which is our podcast tier. It gives you everything from the $3 tier, but also you get additional podcasts every single month. That's right. Two additional Star Trek from the Holodeck podcasts every single month when you pledge. Patreon.com/RainmanDigital. They need to start helping us out, right, Dave?
One should hope by now that our fans will be kind enough to help us out.
Oh, fans, that's a little strong word there. How about just listeners?
Listeners, is that better?
Yeah. No one's a fan of us, Dave. Let's be clear. Let's get back into this, Dave. We were also given, retrospectively, more layers to the legacy of Spock just when we thought we were done with the character.
Yeah.
I mean, and first off, I'm very appreciative of this. I was nervous at first. I'm very hesitant whenever Alex Kurtzman is involved with the handling of established characters, especially so after the atrocity of Picard. But I remind myself that Michelle Paradise has proven that she's an excellent showrunner. Kirsten Beyer is an excellent writer. And they managed to do right by the legacy of Spock and actually expand on it in a way that I was not expecting. The Vulcan culture has changed, and this is a big change for the Vulcan people. And it's a great way to highlight how a culture marred with arrogance and prejudice can transform. But most importantly, it shows the lasting effects that Spock had on the Romulan and Vulcan people. Now, this bit, Dave, was taken from Spock's appearance in The Next Generation during its fifth season.
Yep.
Amazing episodes, by the way, titled yes. Unification Part 1 and 2. So if you didn't pick up on that, that's why this episode was titled Unification 3. They were essentially treating this as a bit of a sequel.
Yes, they were.
Which I kind of squealed a little in fanboy-isms.
You and me both.
Because I was like, oh, shit, this is why it's titled Unification 3. Now I get it. This is fucking cool.
We get to finally see the aftermath of at least the seeds that Spock planted in Unification.
Well, that's an awesome legacy, Dave.
And it is.
Like, Spock has always had a lasting legacy, in my opinion, just because of the original series and all that they accomplished in those movies and TV series. But then you have this, the fact that he's the one who planted those seeds, which is a perfect way of saying it, Dave. You're absolutely right. Planting seeds that would grow into a true peace. And Romulans at peace with Vulcans and even at one point being a part of the Federation. What?
Oh, yeah.
Who would have thought that? I mean, the Romulans have been essentially the villain, the big villain that's in the shadows since the original series.
Yeah, more than even the Klingons.
Well, they've been more. Yeah, you're right. The Klingons have been more the overt villain. The Romulans have always been in the shadows.
Shadows. Always. Since TOS.
Even in Deep Space Nine, when they became allies for a little while to fight the Dominion, they were still always a mystery. Like, can we trust them? Should we trust them? So it's really cool to see them pay tribute to the legacy of Spock in a way like this that felt sincere. You know, you get a lot of people talking about the disrespect of Discovery and how they don't respect what came before. But this is an example that they obviously do.
Yeah.
They obviously do care about established canon to a degree as much as they can. And, of course, respecting what has come before.
Yeah.
I mean, even having Burnham kind of pick up where Spock left off, being the person of integrity to put the mirror up and show what unity means and the Federation, bearing her soul to everyone. I mean, laying it all on the line is what Burnham did in this episode. And that's what Spock did.
Yep.
When he defected, essentially. Well, he didn't defect, but they thought he defected to Romulus.
And it really added to the relationship that we as fans now see, and especially for me after I watched this, it made it more special, that relationship of Burnham and Spock now as siblings, because Burnham was able to continue her brother's legacy, essentially, after he passed on. And that was the thing that I've always wondered since Discovery blasted into the future, is like, what is Burnham going to do when she finds out about Spock's fate? Because it's one of those things.
They kind of skirted past that.
And they skirted past it, but I am so happy in this episode. I was giddy throughout the entire thing because you have Burnham following in her brother's footsteps, but also kind of you see that she's learned from Spock. And she takes those same qualities that Spock and her had, or that they grew in season two.
I mean, they learned from each other.
They learned from each other. And she took those concepts that we saw in season two with the relationship between her and Spock. And it's like it came full circle in this episode where we finally get almost kind of like this perfect ending to that story arc of Spock and Burnham, where Burnham is able to actually see her brother's legacy and save it.
Yeah.
And essentially
that was everything, man. Sonequa Martin Green is such a great actor. And when she learned of Spock's legacy, it resonated. It was a reflection of us as fans.
As fans.
You know, it kind of resembled or mirrored our own feelings, you know, knowing that, you know, 900 and some years into the future, that Spock has this fucking epic legacy.
Yeah, that he has this almost mythic personality in history now.
Meanwhile, Kirk's still trapped in the Nexus.
Who's this Captain Kirk that he traveled with? We don't know. He disappeared.
Making an omelet.
Making an omelet constantly. But like, I was really kind of like what you said. It's like not just as a fan, looking at it as a fan, but also, you know, like in the lens of a sibling, it really tugged on those right strings that you had to kind of for us to actually relate more to Burnham.
I agree. They're charming moments that bring the fans closer to our lead character.
It opens a window into that person to allow us to actually step in and basically more familiarize us with that character, to the point that, let's face it, Star Trek at this right now as a franchise, they need these new characters. They need Saru. They need Burnham. You know, we can only live in the past with characters like Picard and Data and Kirk and Spock.
If the Star Trek franchise is to live on, we need to move on.
We need to move on.
We need to move forward.
And we need new characters. We need new characters to basically add on to the pantheon of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because
they're doing it this season.
Especially this season. Yeah.
All right, so let's dig through what we learned about the Vulcan and Romulan people this episode. We get the idea that the peace was slow going, but they get there over the course of 800 years or so. But then the burn happened, and because they were working on something called SB-19, many people had blamed them for the start of the burn. And this created cultural issues
or I should say caused, cultural issues to reemerge. And at one point, they left the Federation due to a growing distrust. They felt like the Federation had become too big. And that's really all we know. I will say at first, I wasn't sold on this entire idea of a founding member planet leaving the Federation like Vulcan.
But it makes sense, though, when you throw into the context that the Romulans are involved.
Right. So by the end of the episode, you can understand the logic behind Bayer's decision as a writer to kind of create this scenario. It does absolutely work and make sense. I'm not one of those Star Trek fans that don't want change. In fact, change is something we always talk about, Dave, on the show. In fact, you kind of said it a few moments ago about moving on. I mean, change is actually what we both want, as long as it's handled delicately.
Yes.
If you want to do things like Navarre, rename Vulcan, create a Romulan Vulcan society, that makes perfect sense with everything we've seen before in Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
As we mentioned a few moments ago, it solidifies Spock's legacy as well. And by having the episode end on a high note, showing that Saru and Burnham had left a lasting positive impression on the Vulcan and Romulan people, it brings back the theme of the season and weaves it into the episode, which is hope. We are left with the hope that the people of Navarre will return to the Federation in the future. Once again, highlighting the importance of the Discovery crew in this time period. More and more, we see that possibly this should have been their fate. That they were needed. They were an element that was needed to bring back the Federation.
Yeah. You had to actually make the Discovery crew feel important. And that's been something that's been kind of missing.
It's hard to do that when you're in the past because, so we never saw them do that. Okay.
Well, and on top of that, especially with season one and season two, both seasons dealt with a mystery. It was a mystery. We always were told that basically throughout all the season, all the stuff is all mysterious and they have to figure it out.
Right.
But you don't really... Just be in a mystery. If you take that adage with your writing about making the whole season about a mystery, then it loses. Well, what makes these people important?
Well, you can do a mystery in your show, but that's one of the reasons why, you know, I loved season two and
I did too.
And I enjoyed season one for the most part. But as we keep saying, they put way too much emphasis on the mystery for season one. And because of that, we lost sight of many of our characters and things that were being worked on were kind of dropped once the reveals were there because some of those narrative strands were simply designed to create mystery. And you're like, oh, well, now that we know that, let's just ignore this and move on.
And move on.
Yeah. This season, yes, there is a mystery. The Burn is the mystery, but the show is not about that. That's just icing on the cake.
Yes.
All right, so let's go to a very quick break, and then when we get back, we're going to talk about Tilly. Tilly's in charge.
Oh, Tilly can be in charge of me.
Tilly's on top.
Black alert. Black alert.
All right, get more Star Trek from the Holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. There are two specific tiers that Holodeck listeners would love and cherish. And that's our $3 tier and our $5 tier, each of which offers you more Star Trek from the Holodeck discussions, behind the scenes, bonus shows, pre-shows, additional podcast discussions. We get into all of it. So if you want to help us stay on the air, please head to patreon.com/RainmanDigital and pledge. It's the only way we can stay on the air, especially in this day and age where everyone has a podcast. A lot of them are shitty, let's be honest. A lot of celebrity podcasts, a lot of them are shitty, let's be honest.
Surprisingly, yeah.
But they're clogging up those algorithms, and it's harder to be seen. So please, subscribe to our Patreon page. Patreon.com/RainmanDigital.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy. And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it,
no free stuff.
That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Star Trek from the Holodeck. Remember to find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Leave us reviews. Give us thumbs up. We definitely need those reviews. That will help trigger those algorithms a bit more and help us get seen by more people. Again, we have to compete with those corporate podcasts, and that's one way you can definitely help us. All right, Dave. So before we talk about Tilly in charge, did you want a little bit more on Spock?
Honestly,
or is that just kind of, are we pissing in the wind at this point, hoping that we're going to get that?
I think
the Kelvin timeline connection.
I think at this point, this is the best we're going to get connection wise. I really do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still don't know why they're afraid to actually, you know,
say Spock address, went missing.
Yeah. Address the elephant in the room.
That's all we need to know.
Yeah.
Like obviously there's no way for them to know what happened with a split timeline. There really isn't a way. I mean, sure, if you want to get into the weeds and yeah, we time traveled and found another timeline. Yeah, okay. That's fucking convoluted as fuck.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for that. But I would like to get some mention that Spock went missing. Because that's all we know.
That's it.
They said his death. They mentioned his death before his death. So how did he die? Do they think he died in some type of explosion trying to save the Romulan people? I'm assuming. Because they don't know he traveled in the past.
Yeah.
If they were to mention his death and how it was involved, that he died trying to save the Romulan people,
then I'd be like, okay, that's pretty much as best as we're going to get.
I would be 100% happy with that.
Yeah.
Because that's acknowledging the Kelvin timeline. And I understand that Kurtzman is trying to walk on eggshells right now, especially because they were writing this season before the merger took place.
Yeah.
Before the CBS and Paramount had merged. I understand that they were trying to walk on eggshells and be very delicate. But now that it's done, perhaps we'll get those connections later.
I'd hope so.
The merger is in place and there's talk of bringing the Star Trek franchise as a whole together.
Yeah.
And again, so.
Here's the thing. Now, this is just me talking as a fan.
Am I being a Star Trek baby for wanting that? Be honest. Am I being a Star Trek baby?
I'm going to say that yes.
Fuck you, David.
Because here's the thing. That's what I was about to say. It's kind of like, I hate saying this, but it makes me sound like just like what you said, a Star Trek baby. But for some strange reason, I definitely would like at least Burnham to know the fate of Spock.
So you're looking at it just as, hey, it would be fair to the character for her to know.
It'd be fair to the character, but that's
fair to me as well.
Exactly. But a part of me is saying, well, that's also me as the fan saying that it'd be nice because, like, come on, it's her number one, it's her brother. And
I mean,
how do you squeeze
that in, though? And an episode like this, when you're trying to exemplify Spock's importance.
Yes.
How do you then say, oh, and by the way,
he died
a miserable death in an explosion.
And that's why after I viewed this maybe about the third time, I was like going, you know what? I think this is the best we're going to get to addressing Spock.
At least for now.
At least for now. But I mean, like, at least Burnham, I could say that part of me that basically says, well, Burnham would want to know the outcome or, you know, what happened to her brother after she left. You know, it's kind of like part of me feels that that character would want to know that.
Yeah.
And at least seeing that, oh, his legacy, part of his major legacy is actually bringing the Vulcans and the Romulans together as one race now. That was that was his crowning achievement. At least she's addressing her brother at that point. You're seeing the legacy. But now
I'm not unhappy, Dave, by any means. I'm not unhappy. I'm actually content with how they
did it in this episode.
How they tiptoed around. It definitely worked. It didn't feel like they were trying to tiptoe.
No. Yeah. Because they did it within their narrative. That was the thing.
Right. They gave us what we needed to know for the purposes of this episode. And honestly, anything more would have felt a little heavy-handed. So I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining. But I do say eventually it would be nice.
It would.
To get that connection. Just a bit. Later on. Someday. Soon. Before the season ends.
Before the season ends. So stupid.
Before the series ends, at least.
Next episode.
Yes, please. Get on that.
Get on that.
All right, so Tilly is in charge. She's the new number one.
Oh, dude, I was so happy with this.
David, you're like the only one.
I know.
And me. I'm happy as well. But this was very controversial. And unfortunately, I'm very tapped into the Star Trek fandom. Sometimes I wish I wasn't. I saw the trolls coming out in droves. Listen, I get it. The naysayers have a valid argument. I'll give them that. But look at the flip side. Look at how mature Tilly has become this season.
Yeah.
She has been forged in fire. She's learned a lot. She has been through more than most Starfleet officers. What did Saru say? She's learned more about command than any program can teach her.
Yes.
And that's valid. Look what she's been through.
She's been through.
And honestly, Dave, when you look at it, would we expect anything less at this point? Or anything other than what we actually got, this has been her story since season one.
And plus,
since the very first time we met Tilly, this has been her story.
Yeah.
To be a captain, to be command.
Command.
This has been the goal of the writer since day one with Tilly. In the previous episode, we saw how she offered Saru solid advice. It was first officer type advice.
Uh-huh. And the thing is like when you take a look at the crew, the naysayers of making Tilly number one, I'm like, going, who do you want to have as number one then?
A man with big old muscles and a big dick.
No one has been established to be number one more than Tilly.
Okay, listen, I wouldn't mind seeing Culbert as first officer. He's big muscles and a big dick. I hate drawing the line in the sand, Dave. Listen, I'm all about macho men, all right?
Yeah.
But listen, I'm all about writing more than anything. But some of these people, it's like, are they closeted gays? Are they like, I want a man in charge. I want a man. I want a cool guy. What a guy that shoots from the hip and is real muscular and charge.
I want Commander Riker.
Yeah, I want Riker and his sexy, creepy eyes.
And I want his beard. I want my commander to have a beard.
Listen, the little boy in me, the 12-year-old, yes, I want that one cool guy, too. I want the Captain Kirk.
Yeah, but they haven't established anyone in it yet.
Exactly. I think this is very logical for this show. And everything we've seen Tilly up to this point, it makes perfect sense. I wasn't surprised.
Yeah.
I was not surprised when he made her first officer. I was kind of leaning between Lieutenant, Nielsen? Is that Nielsen? The new one that we suddenly recognized out of nowhere?
Yes.
Because they had put a focus on her.
Yes.
And they have made it a point to show us Lieutenant Nielsen. So I'm like, okay, she's going to be first officer. She's going to be number one. Or it's going to be Tilly because it just makes sense the direction her story is going.
Because no one else has been more established than Tilly. Just like what you said is like her whole story started in season one about dealing with actually starting off as an ensign and then moving up the ranks.
Outside of Saru and Burnham, she's the third most consistent character on this
series. Pretty much. And I'm like going, when it comes to, I hate to say it, male characters that, you know, they want a muscular and
I want a warrior.
I want a warrior. Book is the first one that I could say has been introduced to be that archetype, but he is not part of the Discovery crew.
Listen, Book, I like Book, but he needs to wash his hands. I mean, he's all over Burnham this year.
No, dude,
get your fucking hands off her.
Dude, I wish I was his hands.
Get your hands off of Burnham. I'm going to use his personal teleporter to like teleport him into space. I'm like, here, let me tap this real fast. Go ahead. Oh, look it. He's in space. Who's that floating? Bye, Book. I'm just giving the middle finger. Yeah. Bye, Book. Oh,
bye, Book.
So stupid. Now, I liked also that they brought a few things to our attention. When Tilly said, are you picking me because I'm compliant?
Yeah.
Because it's clear she speaks her mind. She's capable of leading. Her interactions, when you look at her interactions with every single crew member on the ship, let me backtrack. She is the only character that's literally interacted with every single crew member on the ship numerous times.
Yeah. And she's the only one that has shown empathy for everyone on the crew.
And from day one, she's been the glue that kept the crew together.
Yeah.
She's always interacting with everyone. So it does make sense. I could have done without that ridiculously cheesy say yes scene. I mean, what is she getting engaged? And that was fucking dumb, but it was touching. I would admit the fucking softy in me was like, yes, say yes.
Say yes.
But afterwards, I'm like, this is fucking stupid.
I'm going in and playing with my action figures.
Where's my cool guy at? I need a cool guy now.
I need a Captain Rios. Honestly, dude, that's what this. I'm like going when it comes to the type of
where's
characters.
Ash Tyler when I need him?
That's true. Ash, where's Ash?
Yeah, it worked, Dave. Everything I felt worked really well in this episode, which does bring us to our final thoughts. Is there anything I'm missing? I feel like we moved pretty fast this episode, but everything was pretty concise.
Everything was concise. The thing I do want to say that I was surprised that I don't know if I missed it. They didn't touch anything about Georgiou. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Like we came off an episode where
that's
essentially
true.
We're telling, essentially in the last episode, we're told Georgiou is sick. Something's wrong with her.
You think maybe even like a 2-minute scene, possibly?
I think
something to remind
that's
us.
That's what I was trying to figure out. Maybe if I missed something, but I watched it like 3 times and I'm like going, I don't, there's no scene actually continuing that really interesting concept that was introduced in the last one where you just basically told us that Georgiou, something's wrong with her.
Well, they're
that she might die. So you'd think that basically they would continue it.
Well, I'm sure we'll get back to it. They took a break. It's a big ship. Lots of things going on.
It is.
But you're right. From a writing standpoint, to remind us would seem like a fair request.
Yeah.
It would make sense. Even if you look at, let's look at big shows that are very large in scope, say Game of Thrones, where you have 12, 15 characters, sometimes 30, depending on the season.
Yeah.
That was one show that definitely made good habits of reminding us of characters, even if they weren't necessarily relevant to that specific episode. They would give us about 2 or 3 minutes, sometimes like 40 seconds to remind us of what's going on with them. So, yeah, you have an argument to be made there for sure.
Especially when you throw into the fact that, okay, we have the reintroduction of Burnham's mom.
Burnham.
And suddenly Georgiou kind of like exited stage right. We don't see anything of her. I would be thinking that basically JoJo would be should have played a big role in this particular episode, but I guess not. That they have other plans for her that veer away from Burnham.
But, yeah, I'm okay with it. I get your point, but I'm okay with it. As long as we don't go more than one episode without getting back to that aspect, because you're right, it was a big part of the last episode, and it has been an issue for JoJo since they got to this to the Starfleet.
To the headquarters. Starfleet, yeah.
Yeah, it's valid. All right, so final thoughts, Dave, and RMD score.
RMD score on this one, I'm giving this one a 92. I really like this episode. I mean, every single episode seems to be getting better and better to me. Like, I keep saying, oh, this is my favorite episode, and this is my favorite episode. Well, this has now become my favorite episode just solely because...
Well, you did give episode 4 a 98%, Dave.
Yeah.
So if this is your favorite episode, then I don't know if 92% is...
Well, I took off some score. As I said, my only concern was, like, there was... Everyone was accounted for except for JoJo, which I was, like, going... Wait a minute.
All right. Did something happen to her? 92%.
So that kind of dipped it a little because I've had time to think, and this is the problem when you've had given me time to think. All right. But like overall, it's a really great episode. I really like, especially afterwards, if fans of Discovery get the chance to go back and rewatch the TNG Unification episodes, episode part 1 and part 2, and then watch Unification 3. There is so much insight I got out of just putting these three together. It was amazing. It made me really happy to see that particular TNG story arc really mattered. And they took something and basically said, hey, the decisions that were made back then matter, and you see the seeds of, like what I said, Spock's legacy, what he was able to do, really, really puts it out there that Spock is probably is the most important Star Trek character in all of Star Trek's history because of all the things that he was able to do as a character. It's definitely something that
I think Guinan is the most important character in all Star Trek.
Guinan is important to me all the time, Mike, and when I'm alone.
Yeah, I don't understand that, Dave, but I'll leave you to your own fetishes.
Oh, that big black booty is...
Oh, wow. Wow.
I know it's hiding underneath there. It's like the Statue of Liberty.
Oh! So, 90...
92. I gave it a 92.
Okay. I'm going to give this episode a 95%. I really enjoyed this episode. They did just a fantastic job crafting and weaving various elements that have been introduced in this season. I'm a big fan of seeing that road that's been paved. You know, when you look back, I'm like, okay, you were working towards this, because it's an art within writing that is missing in a lot of TV shows today. We always say we're in the golden age, or I say, not we, the trades. And many people say, well, we're in the golden age of television. But the finer art of writing a TV show has been lost with the advent of streaming, because there's just too much television and not enough qualified writers to write TV, that we're losing sight of how to write television the right way. And when you watch a TV series like this, you see those literary plants. They're putting those ideas in each and every episode, and then they're using those moments to, I guess, say as signposts, so we can go back to them when we need to for an episode. That's how you write TV. And I know that sounds a little silly. Well, of course you need to do that. But go back and watch other TV shows right now that are popular. And they don't do those things. Nope. Everything's being laid out. Everything's planned. And that's the biggest strength for this season for me, that there's a strategy here. There is a strategy behind the writing. So I am anxious every single episode to watch a new episode. I am very excited to see what happens week after week. So 95%, and that gives us a show score of 93.5, and we round it up to 94% for a show score, Dave.
There you go.
All right. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.